Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Today's guest is someone I would consider to be a celebrity in the realm of North American fruit growing and heritage orchards. Katrina Mendry was the Orchard Program Manager for Montana State University's Western Agricultural Research Center for several years. She oversaw the Montana Heritage Orchard Program, and she was one of the founding members of the Heritage Orchard Conference hosted by University of Idaho. Although she no longer acts in these roles, she still practices fruit tree propagation today with her very own micro tree nursery called Branches and Roots, specializing in propagating fruit trees for people who are losing their tree because they're either relocating, selling a property, or the tree is on its last leg. And now, in a new chapter of her life, Katrina is co-owner of a bookstore in Hamilton, Montana called Chapter One. Katrina, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me. This is really fun.
Well, firstly, I was wondering if you could tell us how your life, study, and career paths led you to fruit growing and heritage orchards?
Yeah, well, I've had a pretty wandering path. I started off in a completely unrelated field doing a lot of community organizing, and that kind of led me into soil science because I got curious about how the soil worked for a particular project. I was kind of encouraging people to build bioswales in an industrial area of Seattle, and I enjoyed the community organizing piece of it, but I was really curious about the science behind what I was encouraging them to do. And so I sought out a researcher at the University of Washington who agreed to meet with me. And in our meeting, she offered me a position in her lab. And I had no science background. I was actually a political science major. But she said if I could get the prerequisite done and get into the school, then I could join her lab and do research with her. And so that's what I did. And I spent 2 years researching soil, but my heart drew me back to Montana. And my husband and I moved here, and I quickly started applying my knowledge in the agricultural community, which is how I ended up at the Western Ag Research Center, doing research with apples. And during that time, there was a big boom in the cider industry and interest in growing cider-specific apples. And so we were doing research on different cultivars of cider apples that would grow in Montana. But alongside that was a project started by two wonderful extension agents called the Montana Heritage Orchard Program. And in that, we would go out into heritage orchards and kind of assess the trees and the fruit and choose some for propagation for nurseries and sell them out into the, or send them out into the community that way. But that was really where I, you know, started to open my eyes to all the different varieties of fruits that grow here in the Intermountain West. And really what fascinates me is the feral and wild apples that kind of grow on the fringes of old homesteads and fields and roadsides and trails and things like that. And when I left my position at the Western Ag Research Center to buy the bookstore, it wasn't long before I felt like I just wanted to find my way back into that world in some way and started my own business with the Branches and Roots Micro Nursery, just doing small scale propagation for people in our community interested in propagating their trees.
Nice. Yeah, I had seen that a lot of the articles you had published were related to food waste and composting and biosolids, which is all really fascinating. So now I understand that progression.
Yeah. So most of my research was the use of organic residuals, which essentially are what make up compost, in stormwater and forestry use, and just striking a balance between their ability to filter water and process pollutants, but also not be a source of nitrogen and phosphorus. And that was really interesting work and definitely very relevant to my world in agriculture in Montana and anywhere, because we need to have nutrients to be able to grow our plants.
Right. That's so cool. Hopefully people are carrying the torch of all those things that you started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you mentioned your transition from horticultural academia to small business ownership, but what was it that spurred that transition?
Well, I think if I were to take you further back in my path, I've always entertained my curiosities, and sometimes that has meant really big life changes. And for example, when I was, you know, considering if grad school was right for me, I was also apprenticing as an electrician. And during that time, I was also baking wedding cakes. And it's just sort of in my nature to kind of keep trying things and creating a life that allows me to follow my passions. And I've, you know, been able to do that here in some really special ways. And yeah, I think, too, I have young kids, and I'm always seeking out a balance between my work and my family life, and the bookstore really offers that. I own it with two other moms, and we all have now 12-year-olds, as well as some other children, and we live all on the same street, and we all come walk to work. And
oh, my gosh.
It just really creates the life I want to have for my family, and that was really my priority. And so then I've just been able to fit in the other stuff around that, and I feel really grateful that it's turned out that way for me. And in many ways, a bookstore is a lot like being an extension agent, in that, you know, you're answering people's questions, you're connecting them to the resources in the community, you're helping them gain new knowledge. And it just is like the topic isn't so singular. And so it fit well for me to move into that. And I still get people who bring me in little scraps of plants and insects. And it's a great place to talk about apples, too. So it's been a good fit.
I love that. I really admire that you've just tried on different things for size all throughout your life. And I wish that for everybody, because it's very therapeutic.
Yeah.
And there's so much to learn in this world.
Yeah. There is. And we only have one life to live. So
that's right. Well, going back to fruit tree propagation and that part of your career, can you tell us about some of your fruit tree mentors?
Yeah. So I learned to graft from a gentleman called Roger Joy, and he grew up in Oregon and moved to Montana, and actually for a bit worked at the experiment station just up the road from where he ended up starting his own nursery. And he propagated a lot of apples, plums, but also other, you know, ornamental trees, maples and aspens and some conifers. And I learned to graft from him. We were establishing one of our research projects that required us to basically like custom graft all of our trees. And it was a humbling experience, because the first few grafts you do, you're like, I know that's not going to work. but there's nothing like repetition to really set in the muscle memory of how to do a good graft. And so I learned a lot from him. And, there's a woman named Sadie Barrett, who I think really, she was part of the Idaho Lost Apple Project that collected apples from Lance Bar, which is an old homestead up the Salmon River. And I think it was from her that I really gained infatuation with all the different apples and old varieties and old plantings. And it was really wonderful, and just kind of having someone to share that interest with locally. And I suppose another person would be Dan Bussey. I think, you know, the research that he's done and the projects he's created are really phenomenal for kind of recording North American and American apple history. And I've always found his encyclopedia really useful. And he's also a great storyteller. So I would put those three together.
Thank you. That'll be useful for our listeners to be able to look up. And so you've kind of alluded to the history of apples, but what is it that's so enchanting about the history of apples?
Gosh, I mean, I've thought about this a lot. And there's a book that I read this fall. It just came out, I think, in September, called The Light Through the Apple Trees. And I think sometimes it's like hard to put your finger on, like, why is it that I just can't help myself? I like love so much to go out into the woods and find apples and even, you know, go back to ones that I don't recall as being good and keep trying them. And I think that part of what it is about apples specifically, because I think fruits in general are just such a gift, but apples, it's just how they've traveled around the globe. And I don't know that this is true, but I sometimes think here in Montana, this is kind of the last frontier for where apples arrived to, because they came through the Southwest with the Spaniards much before they ever arrived in Montana. And same with like down from the north with the Russians and from the east with the English. And then it wasn't until the 1890s that they even got here, but that they literally have traveled around the world with people bringing them to be able to establish new homes. And just the importance of those fruits to connect them to their homes, like some of the Swedish apples and things like that, and German when people were migrating. And they're also just really resilient. And I think that that's really important as kind of a symbol of what we need for the future. And I think apples in Montana particularly, because I feel like if you've lived 100 years in the Intermountain West, not just Montana, but our climate, as you know, is just so volatile and has been for a long time. So those like sudden freezes and warm winds and just all that variability and moisture and temperature throughout the year and a lifetime of these trees, and the fact that we have 150, 200-year-old trees is really cool. So
that's amazing. And what types of purposes or uses were the early settlers in Montana relying on those apples for?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think a pretty typical homestead orchard had yellow transparent, because that was a very popular fruit at the time, but it was also, you know, the early season, so they would start getting fruit early and then could process that. And then, you know, definitely had your like off the tree eating apple, Wealthy, Macintosh, things like that for, you know, making cider and pies and eating. And then a storage apple was important, like Northwest Greening, where you could go into a cellar and maybe last later into the late fall, early winter months. And so just having that food source was important. And apples are actually quite nutritious with high fiber and vitamins and antioxidants and things like that. And they're very portable and durable compared to a lot of other fruits.
Well, you referred to the resilience of these 100, 150, 200-year-old trees. So that would be one reason to preserve heritage fruit trees. But how do those heritage varieties compare to the more mainstream commercially grown apple varieties?
I certainly think they're more interesting, like from a flavor perspective and often also from like their physical appearance. And I think clearly from my background, maybe you could tell, I think variety is the spice of life. So I appreciate that. And I think it's important too that, you know, we don't put all our eggs in one basket right now. So just preserving that genetic variety and diversity is worth spending some time grafting every summer.
I love it. And you referred to grafting. So that's a method of fruit tree propagation. Just for our listeners' sake, can you explain grafting and budding?
Yeah. So I suppose really what I do is budding, because I bud graft. And what I do is in August, I go out and I find the trees that I want to propagate for the fruit. And I have in my nursery, I have rootstock that I planted the spring before, and I gather my budwood, which is from the tree I want from, and I take a single bud off of this current year's growth. And that bud, when I take it off and put it on rootstock, will actually grow another tree, like a whole tree. And then from there, there's many other forms of grafting, but they all hold to the principle that you are connecting the cambium layer, which is that green layer just beneath the bark, where the nutrients and water are transported through the tree and the xylem and phloem. We're connecting those tissue from one tree to the rootstock of another tree. But yeah, I find grafting to be easy once you get the hang of it, and really satisfying, especially come spring when you see those little buds starting to grow into new trees. It's very exciting, very fun.
So we've talked about apples, but what other fruits do you have an interest in growing or seeing them develop as new markets in Montana? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this has kind of been my obsession. I spent some time at a winery and vineyard in Oregon in my early 20s, and it was owned by a Persian family, and they would make these beautiful lunches every day for the staff, and they almost always had quince somewhere in there, and I just loved it. And the father had said, like, I'll send you with a tree when you leave, but I didn't really have a home at the time and was kind of nomadic at the time. And then I ended up moving to Montana, which there's not a whole lot of cold hardy quince that are culinary, so to speak. I mean, we do have some flowering quince and things like that, but I never actually came across a quince until I was meeting a friend in her grandma's backyard, and I looked and I was like, oh, is that a quince tree? And there was a quince tree in her backyard. And she'd lived there for decades and had said that it had always been there. And I have since started to propagate it from seed. A lot of quince are self-fertile, so they'll probably be, the fruit will hopefully be pretty similar because there's not a whole lot of other quince around to pollinate it. There are ornamental varieties, but I personally don't know of another, like, culinary quince, and this is kind of a proper, it's a little small, and it definitely needs some help ripening indoors, but it is really aromatic and makes for a delicious poached quince and things like that. So I'm very excited about those. I've got about 20 of them of varying ages, and I'm hoping to get those to fruiting and see if they're at all like the mother tree. If not, I'm going to use some of them as rootstock for the actual original tree and see if I can get it at all. So there's quince, and then I also have a thing for apricots, and I was super grateful for when we had our visit and you gave me a Crim-6 rootstock, and that turned out to be just what this one apricot I've been trying to propagate likes, and so I've got a really beautiful, successful graft. Yay. That I'm looking forward to seeing how it does come spring. I am, curious about some peaches there's a few that have been found, like, along agricultural ditch and things like that. I'm a little bit worried about getting them to fruiting age here, just because trees are more susceptible to cold injury when they're young. And then another thing I'm going to try this summer is I'm going to propagate a cherry that's actually quite close to my house. And it was late June, and it's a yellow cherry, but it's a sweet cherry, and it was ripe in late June, which is kind of curious. And it's part of we have a lab here. The National Institute of Health has a lab, and it's been there, early 1900s when it started for Rocky Mountain spotted fever tick research. And they have a whole list of all of the trees, but they don't seem to have this one tree, so we don't know what it is, but I'm going to try to propagate that. But yeah, I'm curious about all the tree fruits, and it's super fun when you come across something unique. So
cool, a good tree mystery.
Yeah,
well, I think Washington State University's sweet cherry testing is only $50, just like apples.
Oh, that's a price that's gone down since I
all the other
time genetically testing trees.
Yeah, all the other fruits are still, like, you know, $300-something, but the sweet cherries, okay, and the apples are the affordable ones.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I'd love to. I might just submit that cherry. Yeah, that's cool. Great. Thanks for the tip.
Somebody approached me recently about possibly doing a jujube trial next year, which is interesting.
Oh.
I've seen them grown in greenhouses around here, and they would fruit, but it'll be fun. So I offered to possibly trial some in my nursery.
I think another one that I would love to work with more is mulberry.
Yeah.
Just because it has a really interesting history in homestead planting, and just as a kind of detractant for birds and things like that, but also because I love mulberries.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing about mulberries is they say you can eat the leaves, which I have not tried, but I need to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and like tea, there's a lot of teas that are made from the leaves.
Cool. And then my landlord traveled to Montana earlier this summer, and they came across a pick-your-own hascap farm in Montana. I'm actually not sure where, but that's cool that that's picking up.
It might have been just up the road.
Yeah.
We love our hascaps in Montana. And I appreciate you calling them hascaps over the honeyberry, because I just think they don't taste anything like honey, but they're still delicious. Have you had hascaps?
I have. And then at the recent North American Fruit Explorers virtual conference, I went to a presentation about hascaps. And then I was interested to learn that they're really high in antioxidants, even more than blueberries. Like blueberries only have one layer of antioxidants, but the hascaps have purple on the outside and the inside of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is very cool. And they're really easy to grow. And as long as you get the right cultivars, they will fruit a ton. You just have to be really careful about the birds, because the birds you'll turn around and they'll be gone.
Well, what fruit tree propagation resources would you recommend for our listeners, whether that's online or books or groups?
I think definitely if you can find somebody locally that can just teach you how and show you, like that hands-on learning is pretty useful, especially if you want to like learn different types of grafting. And also, like, the timing of it is pretty important and specific to, like, climate and geographic location. And I've adjusted some of my timing as I've gained more experience. And also, the climate here is changing. And so, like, this fall, I could have grafted well into September. But I would never do that because who could predict whether or not you're going to have the hard frost or not. But, yeah, so just those little bits, like, it can be pretty locally specific. Still on the Experiment Station's website, if you go to the Western Agricultural Research Center in Corvallis, Montana, there's a apple section. If you go there, you'll get led to a tutorial that I've done with some good pictures and some notes about specifically propagating from heritage trees. Because, you know, good budwood is important, and sometimes that's hard to get and hard to find on older trees. They just don't have the same growth and things like that. So I have some tips on there specifically about propagating heritage trees and also identifying them, at least if you have one like we have here in Montana.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah, I wanted to be sure to draw attention to that Heritage Orchard Management Guide.
Yeah, thank you.
And
I have dreams one day I'll be able to make it into an actual book. But.
Oh, cool. That would be great.
Yeah. I think it would make a beautiful, like, tabletop book or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's sections for caring for heritage trees, discovering the history of your orchard, the Pomona of Montana heritage apples, and a Pomona is a book on fruits. And then also the Montana Fruit Production History, a summary and expanded chronology. So, yeah, you've got your chapters there.
Yeah, right.
And then to add another one, they're taking a year off this winter, but the University of Idaho Heritage Orchard Conference YouTube playlist of archived presentations, of which I know you presented at least once. Do you know how many times and topics you presented? Because it's actually not really easy to search for your presentation.
I honestly don't even remember. I did do a grafting one, and I think I might have done one other, but it is a really cool collection of presentations and things. I think John Bunker had some stuff there too. He has a really fun eclectic book. It's very focused on, you know, his area in the Northeast, but I think is a fun read and good resource, and also has a really beautiful identification glossary in the back that he did some drawings for. Apples and the Art of Detection.
Apples and the Art of Detection.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you have any closing words of reflection or inspiration you'd like to share with our listeners?
I always just say, eat well, be well, you know? I mean, that's really what, you know, it's about when we're out there propagating these things, is we want to eat well, and so that we can be well. And apples are a great, you know, conduit into that. So, there.
And all the other tree and bush fruits.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And if any of our listeners are interested in connecting with you, Katrina, either for your Branches and Roots micro nursery or for your Chapter 1 bookstore, how can they get in touch with you or find more information?
Yeah. My nursery email is branchesandrootsmt@gmail.com. And I don't have a website, and I don't have Instagram or social media. I'm kind of going old school on this one, but I'd love to hear from folks. And then our bookstore is online. It's Chapter 1 with the number 1 bookstore, so chapter1bookstore.com. And you can see what we have on our shelves. You can send us an email. You can like us on Instagram. But whatever you do, support your local bookstore.
Awesome. Well, Katrina Mendry, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule selling books and galvanizing fruit growers to join us today.
Great. Well, thank you, Vanessa. It was a pleasure, and I hope we get to meet again in person. Come to Montana anytime.
I would love that, and maybe we could take some fruit field trips.
Yes, I know. Can we get to Kazakhstan?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Thank you to our listeners also for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. You can find my contact info at coloradoedibleforest.com. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. We'll talk to you then.